guys, welcome back to the Way We Parent podcast. Paula here, and this is episode 7 of season 2. Today, I have an interview for you with Jess and Nita from Happy Healthy Eaters. Jess and Nita are registered dietitians, and their Instagram account as well as their website provides amazing information for parents who are looking to start their little ones on solids and just want good guidance on that. So I'm very excited to share this interview with you, but before we get started, just want to check in. You may notice my voice sounds a little bit funny. It does so in the interview as well. I've been sick for a couple of weeks. You know, as some of you guys know, my son started daycare a couple of weeks ago, or actually a couple of months ago. So we've just been perpetually sick. And so that's also why you haven't seen an episode for a couple of weeks. So I apologize for the little impromptu break. I should be able to maintain the pace of one episode a week for the near future. So thank you guys for your continued support. And without further ado, here is Jess and Nita. I have Jess and Nita here from Happy Healthy Eaters. I am so honored you guys decided to come on. I am a big fan of Happy Healthy Eaters, and I kind of wish I knew about it back when I was starting to feed my son. And I think a lot of people are going to feel that way. You guys probably hear that all the time. So let's get started by what is your story? How did you guys start Happy Healthy Eaters, and sort of what led you down this path?
Yeah, it's actually a really kind of a cute story. Jessica had already established an Instagram account and sort of a small community, Happy Healthy Eaters. And then I was, you know, going off having my babies. And when I had my first son, I went to sort of just like a public health session on starting your baby on solids. And it was wonderful. The information was great. But I think as a millennial parent, a foodie, but also a South Asian woman, a lot of the information wasn't very tailored to kind of how I wanted to approach solids with my baby. Like, it just wasn't enough. And so I had to kind of go ahead and like do my own research. And I started to develop a course or a workshop, just Start Solids Confidently. And I would host it from my home. And this is like pre-pandemic. I would host it from my home. 10 parents come. Yeah. And then it just started to kind of grow. I would often go to community centers and other sort of baby hubs to do the presentation. And then after I had my second son, Jess came over for a visit to meet my baby. And I just asked her, like, how's that account, Happy Healthy Eaters, going? And she just kind of mentioned that, you know, she'd kind of given it a break. And then I think a couple of days later, you called me or texted me saying, like, no pressure. I know you're like super postpartum here, but like, you know, you've kind of engaged the community in this workshop. I've got this like Happy Healthy Eaters. Why don't we try to see what we can do to bring the information online? And I'll let Jess finish the story.
Yeah, it's a really like professionally and personally rewarding for both of us to combine our strengths into one passion. You know, we're very like-minded on the, you know, nutrition philosophies and feeding babies, and just really wanting to help parents have that confidence to approach this time with joy, because it is so much fun to feed babies. But, you know, word on the street is that there's a lot of conflicting information out there, and parents feel overwhelmed. And so we're just very honored and happy to be able to guide parents so that they can actually just have fun with feeding their babies.
That's amazing. That's amazing. And sorry, and to rewind back a little bit, you guys are both registered dietitians. And yes. Is that how you guys met?
Yeah, in a way.
Yeah, we hadn't ever gone to school or had classes together that we're aware of, but we were sort of the first dietitians in the city to start blogging. And so when I heard about Jess and her other fantastic blog, smartnutrition.ca, I asked if she wanted to just meet up for coffee. And that was it. That I think that was 2013 or 14.
Yeah, that's
Yeah, that's amazing.
Yeah. Wow.
Cake. So we were both more doing, just say, general nutrition for adults and families and stuff, and then so we kind of kept in contact over the years.
That's amazing. And then motherhood happens, right?
Yeah.
And your focus changes. No, I love that. And I love what you said, Nita, about how you're sort of tailoring it a little bit to a more multicultural audience. And I notice that in your posts all the time. And I think that's so great. And so what does happy, healthy eaters mean?
Yeah, we love sort of our name, Happy Healthy Eaters. And the reason why is because we think it embodies a lot of what we want parents to sort of pursue in this journey of feeding their baby. So when we talk about happy, we want your baby and you to have a really joyous experience around food and make it really, really positive. Mm-hmm. We want it to be a happy, happy time for everyone. We want children to, of course, be healthy. And, you know, there's so many nuances to the word health and what health actually means. And being dietitians, I mean, we focus a lot on micronutrients, but I think the big picture here is we just want your baby to grow well, eat well, meet their nutrient needs. And then the last one is eater. Mm-hmm. And so with that, we try to sort of pursue this idea of raising an intuitive eater, someone who can sort of develop the esteem, you know, going into childhood to say like, I've had enough food, or actually, I think I want a second portion, but also be independent with feeding as well, which we know is really helpful for parents if their kids can feed themselves.
Oh, yeah. Yes, absolutely. And I just love that so much. I'm that, you know, for me, obviously I'm not a dietitian. And so, but what, one of the reasons I wanted to have you guys on, it's such a, and it comes up every so often too with my clients. And I have this like crusade to sort of help people understand, like, listen to your kids' cues, let them listen to their body cues, because I, like many, many people, grew up with so many issues around food, because it was finish everything on your plate and, you know, scrape, scrape, scrape the plate until you finish everything. And, you know, I was a picky eater. So like I had all the things, like I was the worst eater, quote unquote, right? From that personal experience, I want it to be different for my son and for other kids as well. So I'm sure you guys get stories like that all the time.
That is my story too, Paul.
Yeah. 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 That's amazing.
But part, you know, we all have our own journeys, and that was definitely a major influence into my path to become a registered dietitian, was kind of getting over different negative experiences from having that picky eater label as a kid. And
yeah,
kind of, and even like really future projecting, like you said, wanting to change that direction for the future generation. Like if I had kids, and I'm blessed with two boys. And so it's kind of fun, definitely challenging to use these philosophies. And well, they're not just philosophies. I mean, there's definitely science backing what we recommend. But yeah, I'm kind of going on a tangent there.
No, that's okay. I love that. No, I totally, totally feel that so much. And it's funny because I was known as the kid who ate like plain pasta and like hot dogs, you know, like, I mean, there was like four things my mom could feed me without forcing, to like becoming a much more adventurous eater as an adult. And it's because I get to do it on my own time. And, you know, anyways, I'm getting ahead of myself. So I'm going to get over with some.
Principle to remember that, you know, as an adult, you know, you took that choice to do that on your own,
right?
And that's what we want to, this is the major thing to think about, transfer to our kids. You know, they need to have that choice and to learn to approach and enjoy different foods on their own timeline.
Yeah,
forcing's just gonna make them hate it.
So do you find, like, is there, you know, and, you know, for example, when we talk about just childhood development in general, we talk about temperament. So do you see that play out in terms of food? Like, certain kids are just going to be different eaters depending on their temperament?
Yeah, definitely. And we've kind of boiled it down to three kind of major eating personalities. That's what we call them. Yeah. And we have the one that you hope to get, right? The unicorn of being. You have the early adopter that you put anything in front of them and they just gobble it up and they're enthusiastic. And, you know, these are the ones that you'll see on Instagram, right? People, like parents, it's so much fun to take pictures and post that. Look what my baby's eating, right?
Yeah.
And so sometimes we might get the impression that that's what all babies are like. They're not. They're just the fun ones to photograph. And then we have most of the babies in the middle, which are kind of more like the slow and steady, you know, like some foods, sure, they're going to like it right away. Others they're going to reject, you know, and then some, it might take a few times before they learn to like it, but overall they kind of like slowly and steadily acquiring different foods in their repertoire that they'll eat. And then we have like our uber cautious eaters, and this could be for a variety of reasons, you know, personality is one of them, and they're just, they like their comfort zones, and pushing that envelope is very challenging for them. So whether it's the comfort taste, the comfort texture, different things, it's going to be a lot of more initial rejection for food. Mm-hmm. So again, you know, these aren't the babies that parents are likely taking photos of and posting on Instagram.
Hey, but they should.
Like, hey, look what I put in front of my baby and they didn't eat it. You know, parents, if you have a baby like that, please post reality on social media so that other parents can be like, yeah, I have a baby like that too.
Right.
So that we're not seeing the, you know, the eating stars.
Yeah. Yeah. And those are probably that probably was me and you, right? Back in the day. But I mean, it's kind of like with sleep, right? It's, you don't hear about the kids that wake up tons of times a night because parents aren't bragging about it on Instagram. So it's kind of the same thing.
And tired time on Instagram.
Yeah, you're too tired. You're just scrolling aimlessly. But people are quick to be like, my kids slept through the night. Woohoo. Right. So I wonder if
the face.
Yeah. And if you have it, but also what's interesting about that is like the connotation around it, the, you know, you, do you have a good eater? Do you have a good sleeper? Right. And so it's like, then the kids who are cautious eaters, like you mentioned, they're the bad eaters. Right. And it's just, it's subtle, but it gets ingrained in you. Right. I mean, I, you know, like we were talking about.
Yeah, it can become a self-fulfilling prophecy for sure.
For sure. For sure. And so anyways, just to put that out to people that your kid is good, regardless of how they eat or how they sleep or any of that. So the biggest question I think I get all the time, and I remember struggling with this with my son. So it is like the new recommendation that you hear about all the time is to wait till 6 months to feed your baby. But, you know, previously pediatricians, and it was still some pediatricians, are telling people to start at 4 months. And so there's sort of like a big wide range. I know for me, my son was sitting up early. So I was like so excited to start solids, but I felt so guilty starting before 6 months. So what's the deal with the range, and what do you guys recommend?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, in general, across like different bodies and different organizations, the general rule of thumb is somewhere around 6 months. That's sort of that like really sweet spot. But having said that, we are hearing often a lot of pediatricians and other, you know, sort of organizations recommending this range of 4 to 6 months. Mm-hmm. And like, that's a pretty wide range. So just to kind of like also put it into perspective, a 6-month-old baby is 1.5 times older than a 4-month-old baby, mm-hmm. assuming the same gestational age. So like if you had, you know, if two parents had the same physician who practices the same way, and one baby was born at 38 and the other at 42 weeks, like that's still February. That's a whole month.
Yeah.
So I think our message has always been, look at your baby, like, that's their developmental signs of readiness. And so some of the things we look for is, you know, can they kind of nod their head from side to side? And that's really important so they can say no, or are they bringing objects to their mouth? can they sit up with even like minimal support? So my kids didn't sit up until 7 and 8 months. So they were a little bit on the later side, but still normal. But you also don't want to wait to start solids too late either. You really want to catch that opportune window. So we really encourage folks to kind of look at the signs of developmental readiness. And we go over a lot of that in our e-course as well. But that's sort of the key message. And it's so easy to get stuck in that trap of like, well, all the other parents are doing it, or like, this is what the mom next door is doing. But really, you need to look at your baby, because sort of the risk involved is that if you start too early and it's not a positive experience for your baby, they may start to associate eating as a negative experience. And we don't want to go down that road and then have to unlearn or undo that.
Fair enough. And so I guess my question then is, if I start my son at 5 months, am I ruining him? Right. Cause I think that's almost like what it's made to seem sometimes. I mean, again, you guys know how it is. The mommy world is very polarizing in lots of topics, but.
Yeah. I think it'd be different if you started at 2 months. But no, not at all.
Okay. That's good to know. And is there such a thing as too late? Would you say like waiting too much past 6 months?
Definitely. Again, there are nutritional reasons for starting solids. The main one being that babies' iron stores that they acquired in the womb are starting to deplete. So then it's really important to have a food source of iron so that it keeps up with their growth demands. And so you might hear the phrase, you know, food before for one is just for fun. And while we wholeheartedly believe it's definitely fun, there are different needs that food can provide between that 6 to 12 months. And so you do want to somewhere around that six and a half months is sort of the end mark for when you should be starting.
Right. Yeah. And I mean, I see that in I know one of the things I wanted to ask you about is, you know, when babies start eating solids, will they sleep more? And because I get this question all the time, and there's an interesting relationship between that starting solids and sleeping. What do you guys find in this regard?
In terms of like, I mean, I know people have their own anecdotal stories and I don't want to dismiss that, but in terms of sort of the evidence, there isn't a whole lot to suggest that, you know, starting solids early or starting solids at all is going to necessarily improve sleep. It is a little unfortunate because I think often these parents they're just like tired and they're a little bit desperate. But I think that these parents might benefit from other forms of support. And so I would really, you know, encourage parents to, just tune into their own baby. Cause I've also seen, you know, babies also, it takes a bit of time to adjust to solid. So it might actually rock sleep a little bit, or the opposite might happen, or the two might not be contingent at all. It really depends on your own situation. On that note too, like we really don't recommend putting anything in bottles. Like I know there is certain practices of putting, infant cereal in bottles, and we definitely discourage that, and we're not sure why that sort of rhetoric still sort of exists, but we definitely don't want to be doing that unless if maybe you've had like a special occupational therapist or speech pathologist suggest something like that for swallowing reasons, but we discourage that.
For sure, it's unfortunate. You definitely still hear that, and that's what I've, you know, I can say from my side of it, in my practice, is it, I don't see sleep necessarily improving, but what I do sometimes see, and this is where, again, that especially a 6 to 12 month mark is, you know, I do look at what they're eating, and obviously, again, I'm not a dietitian, so I will refer back to you guys if there was a concern, but if I see that a child is not eating a whole lot, or, you know, or they've delayed starting solids for whatever reason, or whatever that may be, that's where we're seeing, okay, then it sounds like they're hungry, right? And then the other issue we have is, you know, timed feeds and things like that, that can cause those problems. But yeah, so I'm glad to know that you guys, you know, are discouraging people from that.
If this helps anybody feel a little less alone, both Jessica and I are dietitians. So like we're pumping like high fat, high iron foods, like offering it to our babies. And neither of our babies were like amazing sleepers. Like they all needed nursing throughout the night. And so I know personally for me, like that really didn't stop until after their first birthday. And I know for some babies, it goes well beyond that.
Yeah.
It's really important to remember that babies have these little stomachs and they can only hold so much at one time. Yeah. And they are growing exponentially. From birth to a year, they are about tripling their weight. Mm-hmm. And so they eat frequently in order to meet those needs. And we can't just fill them up before bedtime because they only have so much capacity in those little bodies.
That's what I always say to people. I've said, you know, can you go 12 hours without eating regularly? I mean, most adults probably can, but I barely can. it makes sense, right? Okay. Now the other question I have, and again, you know, seems to be the trend and the thing that everyone's talking about these days is baby-led weaning. Of course, it's not a trend. It's been going around forever, but it's like the thing that everyone's doing. And it almost seems to be another polarizing topic, like everything on the internet and motherhood, but of this, like, which is better, you know, is it better to do baby-led weaning? Is it better to do purees or solid? You know, there's like a lot of competition almost. So what do you guys recommend?
Yeah. I mean, in terms of maybe some of your the listeners, they may not know what baby-led weaning is. Just really quickly, at the heart of baby-led weaning, which hails, the term itself hails from like the United Kingdom. The idea behind that is the parent is not putting any food into the baby's mouth. So the baby is picking up food or a spoon and self-feeding from the start. And so it still includes some purees, but usually these are like things like meatballs, a potato stick, a banana, like that they're holding on to. And you know, the Coles Note version that I'll give you, and I'll let Jess expand on it, is that there is no one right way to start feeding your baby. But the idea is, you know, you want to be advancing texture, so that way by the time you're celebrating your baby's first birthday, you can gather around a family table and you're all enjoying the same food. And it's just slightly modified in bite-sized pieces for your baby. That's the big kind of goal there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like you said, it can be polarizing. I heard from many, many parents that have said, oh, you know, my neighbor is just saying, you know, baby-led means the only way that you can feed your baby. And so I started it, but I was so nervous and it really stressed me out. And I don't think my baby was doing well on it. But you know, it's the best. And so I should probably get over this, but I don't know how. We get those conversations. And it, like Nita said, there isn't one right way for each baby. We definitely love a lot of the baby-led weaning concepts, and that we know that it isn't for every baby. There are some situations where maybe it's not best. Maybe some situations for the parents, if it causes them a lot of anxiety, then it's not the best. And for those who are feeling like they do want to start with, you know, purees and spoon feeding, just know again that you're not going to wreck your baby if you start that way. And we kind of have an approach called the Happy Healthy Eaters approach, where we actually encourage more of a combination, because we recognize that different babies, different families will thrive. And, you know, the purees and spoon feeding can kind of help meet some of those nutritional gaps, whereas the handheld foods really help babies' development, you know, those motor skills and all the sensory experience and just that independence. So you know, you can kind of work both angles too and see, and then also gives your baby the opportunity to try both and see what works better for them. You know, if you're only doing one way or the other, then you don't really know which one your baby would prefer.
Totally. Yeah. Yeah. I love that. I love that. You know, it seems like a reasonable approach and less anxiety inducing. And on that, you know, again, obviously feeding causes a lot of anxiety for parents for several reasons, but what would you say is the biggest fear, especially baby-led weaning wise?
Choking.
Choking. Tell me about choking.
Yeah. I mean, choking is pretty traumatic for sure. And it is because it's potentially life-threatening. But the challenge here is that parents often confuse choking for gagging. Mm-hmm. And so I think having a really good understanding of what the two actually look like can be really helpful. So I always recommend parents like get on YouTube and look up like baby eating while gagging and then watch these videos so you can kind of get used to the idea of like mm-hmm. what it looks like when they're gagging, because it also is pretty dramatic looking. Mm-hmm. But yes, choking definitely is the number one fear for good reasons. And I think if, you know, if you're embarking on starting solids, it could be really helpful to take a first aid or some type of, you know, a course so that you feel really empowered. Should you be in a situation where you need to offer your baby some support until more, you know, emergency support, you know, makes their way over yeah. to you, it's very, very important to do that.
Yeah. Additionally, in our e-course, we break it down all the different ways that you can maximize safety for your baby. Obviously, we can't guarantee no choking because unfortunately, sometimes, you know, you can do, you can be the best driver in the world, but sometimes you might have a collision, right? Right. So you take driver's ed and you learn how to do everything as safe as possible. But, you know, obviously occasionally something adverse might happen. So kind of the same thing, you know, with our course, we teach parents all the ways to maximize safety so that, you know, you're doing your part. And then again, yeah. Worst case scenario, if it does happen, which is rare, having that first aid training can really make you feel prepared that you know exactly what mm-hmm, to do. Mm-hmm.
One point I wanted to add too is like a baby could choke on anything. And mm-hmm. I think when they start solids, all of a sudden it's like, yep, it's going to be food, but it could be like an object around the house. I mean, they're interested in like tiny yeah. little like things. Right. And it could be any food texture as well.
Yeah. Yeah. It just sometimes goes down the wrong way, right? It doesn't even necessarily mean you cut it wrong or you did something wrong. You know, I think there's a lot of that sort of fear as well. But yeah, absolutely. I think that is the biggest thing. It was really cool with my son. We did mostly just finger foods, and it is very foreign to my parents and my family. And so they were like, I remember my mom, like the couple of times he gagged, she lost it. So I was like, he's fine. You know, my background is as an early childhood educator. So I've seen so many kids eat that I'm confident enough to be like, oh yeah, he's okay. Lucky for me, because I know that's not the experience for a lot of parents, but anyways, it was just so interesting. But now, then when he got older, he loved to brag to everybody about how he eats and look at him, he feeds himself. And it's just, it's pretty cool. That was just a random. Yeah. 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 I think, you know, that's what ends up happening. But, so yeah, no, that's good to know. And I totally, totally agree with you. And, you know, again, part of my training as an ECE was to have, first aid and CPR. So I think that is huge for people to take that. I think it's just like, it's a great idea. They should really just kind of they probably do, but offer it to parents, like there's like parent geared first aid and CPR courses, because, that is so important to be aware of what to do. I think that's so empowering and helps you feel safer, when you're doing that. Now, what foods do you recommend starting with? No, that's another can of worms.
yeah, definitely iron rich foods is sort of like the recommendation here. And so, you know, depending on whether your family is, you know, eating animal products or not. So how you're going to approach it might vary, but really the emphasis is on iron-rich foods. We actually are really big fans of infant cereal. It shouldn't be the be-all, end-all, like something that your child is eating multiple times a day, every single day. But infant cereal that's been fortified with iron is great. Mm-hmm. Different animal meats like dark poultry, beef, bison. Mm-hmm. If you have access to game, I think that's really great, especially if you are a family who's still very connected to sort of like hunting and gathering. I think that that's wonderful. And then in particular for me, I grew up with in a Hindu household, so we didn't have a lot of meat and there were a lot of fasting days. So it was really important for me to offer my children plant-based proteins that had iron in it. So mm-hmm. things like lentils and legumes and tofu were a really big part of our cuisine when they were really little.
That's amazing. Yeah, I was going to ask about vegan and vegetarian folks, because I know that comes up a lot. And legumes are really good for protein and lots of stuff. I mean, they have a lot of stuff in them.
And they're so tasty.
It's actually funny how, so my parents, their business is they make legume soups, and people are always surprised at how well kids will eat them. Like, kids love them. My son loves like the lentils and he loves all that stuff. So, that's really cool. What was my other question I had? What about something like bone broth, stuff like that?
Yeah, definitely. If you like to make bone broth, that is one way to add some extra nutrients compared to regular broth. It does not have magical healing properties, but it's certainly a traditional food. And I think it's a great way to kind of honor the animal and use a lot more of it and just mm-hmm. be more resourceful with the food we have and reducing waste and that sort of thing as well.
I'm curious about spice, because I know that's again, like I was saying before, right? A lot of times people think babies cannot handle spice, or you should make things very bland and boring for them. What's your thoughts?
Oh, don't make them bland and boring. I mean, if as a family you eat bland and boring food, cool, like it's fine. But if you are a family, and I find most millennial parents are like this, they like to like make or order in Thai food or have sushi. And like, we're just, I think have this like really rich food landscape now. And so if you enjoy that, then introduce that to your baby as well. You might have to adapt recipes, but the general rule of thumb is there's no spice really that's off limits. You just want to tone down the chili or the actual like spicy. Mm-hmm. In recipes, just because if they're touching it and then it gets on their skin or in their eyes, it could be pretty painful. I know when I've chopped like jalapenos and I've accidentally gotten a bit in my eye or it burns for sure. So, you know, just tread lightly in that department. But I know for both my boys, they're 2 and 4 now, they can handle the exact same spice level in like our Indian cooking as me.
That's amazing. My son can handle more than me, actually. Yeah. My husband's Jamaican and he loves it. And we don't eat that. Actually, he doesn't eat that spice either, mostly because I don't like spice. But one time I accidentally dropped too much of the jerk seasoning in the food and I couldn't eat it. Like, it was too spicy for me. My son devoured it. So it's just, and he was like 1.5 years. So just putting that out there for people, kids will love that. Kids are funny like that. What about salt? Do we worry about salt?
You know, we try and not use the word worry, but in terms of salt for babies, we do want to keep the salt shaker, away from their food. So, when we're preparing foods for baby, definitely family foods are on the table, but the foods that are high sodium, so that's one of the minerals in salt, we want to keep those ingredients to the side and then add them for the older members of the family, simply because baby's renal system, so their kidneys, aren't quite developed yet until around 12 months to handle that higher sodium. So they're primed to basically just filter everything in the kidney at the sodium level of breast milk. And so if there's higher salt, it just stays in their body, and it's you know, it could be correlated with higher blood pressure later on in life. So we just kind of caution against that. You know, if you can add like a little bit, again, we don't want parents to get super worried about this. Right. You know, if they can have like a little bit of sodium. And as I said, you know, it's a gradual development. So as they get older, you know, we'd be more concerned about a tiny preemie for some reason having like more sodium than we would an 11 month old, right? So it's a general progression.
Can we talk about cow's milk? And cow's milk intolerance, one, is something that comes up quite a bit. And the other thing is it needed?
Yeah. I'll answer the question about, well, just sort of what our general recommendation is around dairy. And so what we want to recognize is that a baby's, when they're starting solids, they're, you know, the nutrient of focus here really is iron, but dairy is rich in calcium. And the challenge is if we're introducing a lot of dairy quite early on, it could displace a baby's opportunity to eat iron-rich foods. So that's why we tend to recommend, you know, holding off on it until your baby's kind of established a comfort level with a variety of iron-rich foods. So that's one thing to kind of keep in mind. The other thing to keep in mind is that dairy, the calcium can sometimes inhibit or decrease the absorption of that iron. So if you're putting all of this energy into sort of making iron-rich foods, we want to maximize that as much as we can, especially like really early on when that storage bank is depleting. And this is a little like biochemy. And to your note about like, is dairy absolutely like necessary? No. And I think it depends on your own family needs, but as a dietitian with a bit more of a clinical background, I would want to have a really good understanding and confidence that there's a whole host of other foods that are being included in the baby's diet that can help make up for those needs after 12 months, right? Like this is when parents tend to transition to cow's milk if they want to. But yeah, it's really about like letting parents know, like, how are we going to meet calcium needs? How are we going to make up for this, you know, B12? And what about this fat? Like what else is in the diet? Right. Mm-hmm. And the challenge there is like, you know, around 18 months, kids can get a bit more selective. So you've got your really adventurous eater, and then they kind of pick and choose what they want a little bit more as they age. And so it's just about ensuring that folks feel really confident with that.
Yeah, and the other side of it is it's important to remember that babies, when they're born, you know, they are designed to eat a 100% liquid diet. And then when we start solids, we're introducing new textures, but it's a gradual progression away from that liquid calorie diet to the solid diet. And around 12 months of age, you know, again, each child will vary, but it's about between 40 to 60% is still going to be that milk. So whether that's breast milk, formula, cow's milk. So when we're thinking about transitioning maybe off of breast milk or formula to a plant-based beverage, it's really important to look at those nutritional factors and are they matching up to cow's milk. And again, people ask, well, why is cow's milk the standard? Well, it's simply because in the past 100 years, that has been the default in North America. And we're speaking from a North American experience here and the science, and that's how we've seen babies grow and develop. So that ends up being our benchmark. So when we see babies on other milks and maybe they're growing differently, we're not sure if that is, you know, physiologically fine for that deviation from kind of the cow's milk normal or not. Mm-hmm. And so that's just sort of I think there's going to be a lot more research coming up on this in the future and then have more evidence to be able to say, yes, you know, maybe the growth trajectory is a little bit different on this plant-based beverage, but it's fine. It doesn't alter their long-term health.
Right.
That's just sort of, yeah, we could talk about the issue because it ends up being a big issue for people, but this topic like for a long time.
Yeah, I think it is. It's just interesting because I think there was for such a long time this sort of big push, and you know, I guess there are the conspiracies that the dairy farmers kind of wanted everybody to think milk was the thing that you need to do to give. So there is still, it's so embedded in our culture that I see it all the time where parents and pediatricians will even say like they need to have this many ounces of cow's milk per day. And it's a lot. Like I see, I, you know, when I work with parents, again, I ask them about what they're eating. And so I see kids that are having like huge bottles of milk several times a day, but then I'm looking and they're not getting like a ton of solids. And I'm wondering, you know, again, obviously I don't know everything about the nutrients that they're getting, but it seems to me like it's replacing meals, that they could be having. And then at the same time, or I see parents stressed out because the kid doesn't want to drink milk. You know, their 18-month-old won't take a milk bottle. And I'm always kind of like, but do they need it? Like if they don't need it, you know? So I think that's where it becomes a bit of a concern when it creates stress for the parents.
Totally. Yeah. And I think that's, you know, finding someone, a dietitian or, you know, whoever it is, an OT, SLP in the sort of feeding world who can help support you through some of this is kind of exactly the reason why we're here, even if it's just to like reassure you, like it's okay. Mm-hmm. Or it might be, you know, just to offer a couple suggestions, assess for like new supplements, whatever the case is. Sometimes it's just nice to connect with someone a bit more one-on-one.
Yeah, for sure. And I always, well, you guys know, I always send people your way.
We really appreciate your support, Paula. Thank you so much.
Oh, no problem. I just want people to get the right information. And I know, you know, again, this is the two things I think parents stress about the most is sleep and eating. And I always say to people too, like from a development perspective and just from, like we're looking at behaviors, those are the things that we can't control really. Like you can control what you offer to your child. You can control how much you can control the space where you offer them sleep, right? But we can't control how much they actually end up eating and how much they actually end up sleeping. Like that is the one thing that they have control over. And really it's not even conscious control a lot of the time. So, you know, then those are the things that we tend to stress about the most, I think, because we cannot fit our kids into these like perfect little charts and, you know, they eat this many things per day and they sleep this many hours. Like it just doesn't work that way.
I definitely think that's, you know, basically a broader lesson in life, like looking at like your locus of control, like what do you have control over and letting go of what you don't have control over.
Yeah, for sure. I'm sure that you guys touch upon all of these things in your course, which people can find. I will make sure to link that in the notes. Is there anything else you want people to know about you guys? Anything that you have coming up or?
We've got actually two workshop webinars coming up. One is on November 27th. Then we've also got one in December. It's a weekday. I believe it's December 16th in the evening. And this is really a unique opportunity for you to join us live and ask us Q&As. It's about a two and a half hour session. So, you know, we really don't stop until the questions like dwindle down. And that's really nice. And it's an intimate group as well. We try to cap it at no more than 25 to 30 folks. And you do get a replay option, which is also really helpful in case you get kind of busy or sidetracked with baby. And that's really fun for us. It's just, I think Paula, you can probably relate to this, like working, like being on Instagram and on social media is really great. But then when you get to actually like have these meaningful connections with folks, whether it's in person or online, nothing energizes me more than that. So
100%.
Yeah. We'd love to have people join us there. And I think that's all we've kind of got coming up.
That's amazing. Yeah. And definitely, you know, for everybody at home, check out Happy Healthy Eaters on Instagram. Tons and tons of information on your page. And you have a website as well. Is there a blog in there as well, you said?
Yeah, blog. And I guess just one more thing to, for parents to kind of stay tuned for. You know, we've been talking a lot about babies today, touched a little bit on toddlerhood, and that is our next Mount Everest, I guess. We're working on toddler content, so stay tuned. If your babies are getting a little older, we will be having more content for the toddlers coming up as well. So don't unfollow your baby graduates.
Oh gosh, no. I have a 2-year-old and I still like learn so much from you guys. And yeah, totally. I think that's another, you know, and I do want to touch on that briefly for people at home is, you know, it's like they will go through phases where they eat a whole lot. Like my son, I can tell when he's going through a growth spurt because he's ravenous. Like he is a monster. And then there's weeks, like weeks will go by where I'm like, how are you alive? Like you've like eaten nothing for the last 2 weeks. So is that something you guys see that in your practice a lot?
Yeah, totally. I think, you know, when you have a really little baby, it's like so easy to monitor or the sort of like drive to monitor what they eat every day. But like, we really don't want to be doing that at all. And then certainly in toddlerhood, like we're looking at like, what is like overall, like in a week or over a couple of weeks, like what does this intake really look like? But you're right. It's this ebb and flow, and children and adults, like we have this like innate wisdom to get exactly what we need if we're presented with those opportunities, right? Mm-hmm. Just, you know, supporting that intuition is so important.
Yeah, amazing. Yeah, so just if you have a toddler at home, don't stress if they're kind of going up and down, unless it's, you know, you're seeing, I guess, when should we worry about lack of eating? I guess that was my other question I forgot to ask you guys, sorry.
Nita might have her own, but my kind of guideline is if it's lasting longer than 5 days and you don't have a specific reason, you know, sometimes, you know, initially intake drops off and then a day or two later, baby's sick and you're like, oh, okay. Or intake drops off and then, oh, baby's teething. Okay. Mm-hmm. Or intake drops off and then all of a sudden baby's crawling. You're like, oh, they were really working on that. And so if it's been like 3 to 5 days and you're not seeing, and this is like drastic, like not eating any much at all, and you're not seeing a correlation, then, you know, definitely get in touch with the healthcare provider. Just, you know, we do want to keep on top of things. But definitely just general ebb and flows for appetite is totally par for the course.
Perfect. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think if you're a parent and you're feeling anxious about your baby not getting enough, and even if nothing is happening, like feel free to reach out to someone to see, you know, maybe it's just reassurance, but at any point, if you want to, for sure. I know for me, definitely. Like if you are going to these monthly appointments or wellness checks with the physician and growth, you know, growth is kind of falling off, like we can kind of work on that as well. But yeah, I think if you have a general concern or this like not a good feeling, then talk to someone. It might not even be a dietitian, it might even be an IBCLC. Like it just talk to someone, it might just help you feel better in that moment.
That's a good point. I don't want to keep taking so much of your guys' time, but I do have one last question. Because on that note about lack of eating, if your baby is 7, 8, 9 months old and they haven't taken to solids much, like when do you worry that they're not eating enough? Because that's another one I get a lot of the times.
Yeah, I think for me too, around the, if a baby isn't really like ingesting a lot of food, 8 months, like I'd want to kind of learn a little bit more, like what are milk feeds, like bottle or nursing sessions, like what's that looking like? But also like differential diagnoses, which is like this idea that is there something else here that we're not seeing, and just getting that assessed. But it can definitely take babies like a couple weeks or months to warm up to the idea of like, I have to pick this food up, bite it, chew it, swallow, and breathe at the same time. Like, this is a super complex process. And as adults, like, who eat, like, you know, multiple times a day, we take it for granted, but for a baby, it is, you know, quite complex. But yes, if it's like we're into the eight month mark and not a whole lot of eating is happening, then I'd want to just know a little bit about why. Another important thing on that note is, like, I would ask parents, are you modeling eating? Like, are you eating with your baby? That's so important. It's such a social aspect and it's a learned behavior. So they need to see you, the people they love, eating. And then that could actually just change the game as well.
Yeah, totally.
How much we learn just from, it's almost like subconsciously learning by watching other people do things. And
yeah,
like our brain is absorbing how it's done. It's kind of, it's pretty cool.
Yeah. Yeah. And kids, and especially as you get, well, and with toddlers, they definitely want to copy you and do what you're doing. So that's I tell people that as a trick. If I want my son to eat something, I have to put it on my plate. That's my trick to get him to eat something.
Yeah.
Just don't serve it to him. It's fine. Yeah. He'll eat it off of my plate. but yeah, that's awesome. Well, thank you guys so much. This was super helpful. I'm sure everybody at home has learned something from you guys today. Again, like I said, everything will be in the show notes. Please check out their course if you guys are starting Solid soon. And look out for that toddler course. I'm looking forward to that. So yeah, thank you guys so much. Is there any messages you want to leave the folks with?
No, just a huge thank you to you,
you're so sweet.
Unwavering support, but also like for taking up space in social media as well, because I think your perspectives are so important. And I just love the way that you engage with, you know, your community as well. So thank you so much.
Oh, you guys are so kind. Thank you so much. I'm so glad. Yay. Well, have a wonderful rest of your day, you guys. And I will catch you around, I'm sure. Thank you so much for listening. I really hope you enjoyed that episode as much as I did. If you enjoyed it, please go on iTunes and give us a review so that others can find us and share it on your socials. Join me on Instagram at Paula Morales McDowell and keep the conversation going. What did you love? What questions do you have? Who do you want to hear from next? Catch you next week.